Okay. Hope everybody had a great weekend. We had a lot of conversations around here today. By now, it's hit the podcast that is on Sunday morning with Sheldon Primus, the safety consultant you heard here on Safety FM. We had a great conversation on a lot of stuff. We were talking primarily about diversity, equity, and inclusion. I couldn't think of the word on Sunday. I'm drawing a blank. It's one of those things, you know. But you folks know me. I'm all over the place as usual. This past weekend, right? This is what I've been up to. I, of course, we're working on the radio show and everything and on the podcast, and we're trying to revamp a lot of stuff. So I'm using, I have new commercials. Everybody's no doubt heard them. I've had trying to do things really, really well around here because you folks deserve it, right? Let's just face it. Everybody, you deserve it. You've been supporting me going on 353 programs here. On Safety FM, on either podcast, live stream like here on Safety FM, the video cast, and everything else. And, you guys deserve it. I have to have some respect, so we went through a couple of rough areas here with time and schedule, and I finally settled down to the point where we're able to talk about this stuff. When I had to re-up my credentials with the BCSP, that's Board of Certified Safety Professionals, all right, every 4 years they're on a cycle for a continuing ed, I got reauthorized for both my ASP credential and my CSP credential. They're like, well, why do you have both? Well, because some places that I go to, they like to see you have more credentials, even though we all know that computers often, or people who are unfamiliar with safety, they don't know what exactly they're looking at. And I've heard things where people with ASP and CSP on their resume, even though you become a certified safety professional, you have to be an associate safety professional or meet another prerequisite, like an accredited master's program or something like that. There are many different ways. So they see ASV and CSV, they're the computer programs that they're using and everything won't kick you out. They'll make you as qualified as someone else. Just one of those things. It's very frustrating that we have computers running the show now rather than human beings on a lot of this stuff.
World. One voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant. That's Safety Wars. Join the safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Want to avoid hefty OSHA fines and keep your team safe? Let's dive into the General Duty Clause. The General Duty Clause, Section 5, A1 of the OSHA Act of 1970, is a catch-all rule to cover unregulated hazards. Employers must keep workplaces free from recognized dangers that could cause death or serious harm. For OSHA to cite you under the General Duty Clause, they must prove the following four things. 1. The employer failed to render its workplace free of a hazard. 2. An employee was exposed to that hazard. 3. That hazard was causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. And 4. Feasible means exist to free the workplace of the hazard. Employees aren't off the hook either. Section 5B mandates they follow all safety standards. Both employers and employees must work together to maintain a safe work environment. Examples: think lifting above shoulder height repeatedly or working without proper support. Stay proactive. Monitor work areas, apply the four-part test, and you'll prevent those nasty citations and keep everyone safe. Need help? And more information? Contact Jim Pozell and the Safety Wars team to help you prevent workplace incidents, conduct safety audits and training. Contact the Safety Wars team at jim@safetywars.com or 845-269-5772. Visit us on the web at www.safetywars.com. Let's build a safer workplace together.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, we're back here. So we're going to start this all over again here. So real simple. We had some audio issues. We're going to be going over some maritime guidelines. Last Friday, we did construction outreach training programs. Today, I was in a meeting, and someone had requested information on maritime training, and this is where it gets a little bit confusing. Everyone's always confused with this one, and it's not necessarily their fault, because this is, when you say maritime, what do you think of when you think maritime? You're thinking ships. You're on the water. You know, I'm Popeye the Sailor Man, Popeye the Sailor Man, right? You know this song if you grew up in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. You're thinking sailors and everything else. That's not necessarily true. Normally, with ships, that is all regulated by other people, like the Coast Guard. And the other thing is this. One of the reasons why I tell people, this is... reality. Oftentimes, life on ships is 30 years behind everyone else. Why? Because ultimately, who's responsible for all the activities on that ship? The captain, right? Normally. I'm not an expert in law and everything on that, and I'm not an attorney, but normally that's how, whether or not that's true or not, that's how things are managed. And if the captain hasn't embraced safety, other than, hey, the ship safety or life safety, dealing with the ship, that's easy. That's an easy one to get because that's what the Coast Guard will enforce and everything. That's what everyone is familiar with. And the captain won't embrace all the other stuff related to OSHA and other occupational safety and health stuff. Guess what? You're not going to, you'll have life jackets in case you sink, But what about if you're on a ship and you get an eye injury? How do you handle that? How do you prevent that, more importantly? And handling it is one thing, and preventing it is another. That's where we're at, is in the preventing industry. So with maritime, what you're dealing with is shipyards, where you're building ships, breaking ships, working on ships. You're dealing with marine terminals. So that's like if you're dealing with loading and unloading ships. And then you have longshoring, where you're dealing with things, dealing with cargo and things of that nature. And we're going to go through that here. So we're going to go on over to the regulations here on this, and law and regulations. So let's do a share screen here. Boom, boom, boom. Share screen. Hold on. Okay, we're going to share a screen, and it's going to be Google Chrome, and there we are, share a screen. So right here we have the OSHA. Over here we have the OSHA standards, and we have general industry, construction, maritime, agriculture, record keeping, whistleblower, and preambles. So we're going to mosey out over to maritime, and we're going to click on that. And here we have four different areas. Part 1915, occupational safety and health of the standards for shipyards. Part 1917 for marine terminals. Part 1918 for safety and health regulations for longshoring. So we're going to click on 915, and we're going to click on 1915.2, which is scope and application. Except where otherwise provided, the provisions of this part shall apply to all ship repairing, ship building, and ship breaking employments and related employments. Right, this part does not apply to matters under the control of the U.S. Coast Guard within the scope of Title 52 of the revised statutes, blah, 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 including but not restricted to, and it has a whole bunch of stuff written there. So that's where that's relevant. Now we're going to go over to the next one, what's relevant, Part 1917, which is marine terminals. Let's click on scope on that. The regulations of this part apply to employment within a marine terminal as defined in 1917.2, including the loading, unloading, movement, or other handling of cargo, ships, stores, or gear within the terminal or into or out of any land carrier holding a consolidation area, any other activity within and associated with the overall operation and functions in the terminal, such as the use and routine maintenance of facilities and equipment, all cargo transfer accomplished within the use of shore-based material handling devices shall be regulated by this part. All right, so that is marine terminals. Now we're going to go over to longshoring here, 1918 Safety and Health Regulations for Longshoring, and scope and application. The regulations of this part apply to longshoring operations and related employments aboard vessels, all cargo transfer accomplished with the use of shore-based material handling devices. Again, shore-based. It's covered by 1917 of that chapter. So this is, let's say you have a crane or other loading or unloading equipment on the ship. This is where this deals with, right? With this, is with on the ship, my understanding. Now, you have to figure out what kind of training do you need for outreach? Do you need shipyard? Do you need marine terminals? Do you need safety and health regulations for longshoring? Where are you on that? Because that's going to cover the three maritime areas. So we're going to go on over to the, and this is dated on, again, this was issued in July 1st, 2024, and it's effective October 1st, 2024. And we're going to read this right out of the procedures. The purpose of the OSHA Outreach Training Program for Maritime is to teach maritime workers about their rights, employer responsibilities, and how to file a complaint All right, let's make that a little bit bigger. How to file a complaint, as well as how to recognize, abate, and prevent job-related hazards. OSHA authorizes safety and health professionals to complete an OSHA Outreach Maritime Trainer course to conduct occupational safety and health classes for maritime workers. Pardon me. After the training is completed, trainers document blah, blah, blah through the ATO authorized training. And basically, you need experience and you need coursework, continuing education, and an update every 4 years. And here we have Maritime Industry Procedures. This section contains information on the procedures for conducting program classes in the maritime industry. Outreach trainers are responsible for understanding and complying with these procedures and planning and conducting their program classes. So we have the 10-hour maritime industry designated training topics. This is required for all three maritime courses, shipyard, marine terminals, and longshoring. I do this way, not through PowerPoints, because a lot of times people don't believe the PowerPoints. They want to see this. Whether they say that or not, that's what they want. OSHA has required training content for this module here. Introduction to OSHA, 1 hour. This is for the 10-hour course here, right? Well, 3 hours applies to all, right? Maritime, introduction to OSHA. Walking and working surfaces, 1 hour and 1 hour each. 1 hour for walking, working surfaces, 1 hour for PPE. This applies to shipyard only. An additional 4 hours. Each course must be covered for a minimum of 1 hour. Fall protection and scaffolding, 1 hour. Electrical, 1 hour. Confined and enclosed spaces, 1 hour. Fire protection, 1 hour. All right? Then you, so if you're in a shipyard, now you have six hours to have covered there. Now you have an elective. For a shipyard employment, you need 1 hour of the following, right? And for marine and terminals and longshoring, you need at least two of these topics. So for shipyard, 1 hour, marine terminals and longshoring, 4 hours. Right, so of the elective courses, each course must be covered for a minimum 30 minutes. So for shipyard employment, you have hazard communications, hazardous materials, lockout, tagout, or respiratory protection. All right, so right for marine terminals and longshoring only, you have fall protection, electrical, confined and enclosed spaces, and fire protection. This is where it's confusing. So this is why we read every time we do a class to see if there was an update or something, because that's happened before also, where you're in the middle of something and they change things right from month to month. So for shipyard employment, these electives, you need 1 hour, right? For marine terminals and longshoring, 4 hours. So for shipyard, HAZCOM, hazardous materials, lockout, tagout, respiratory protection, you need 1 hour. For maritime and longshore, you need those three that I just read. Plus, you have an option of the elective of the other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So there's got to be 4 hours in there. Optional shipyard employment. So if you're keeping track, now you're up to 9 hours for shipyard. Right, marine terminals, right, shipyard employment, 2 hours, marine terminals and longshoring, 3 hours, and you have hot work, material handling, bloodborne pathogens, machine guarding, ergonomics and proper lifting techniques, additional coverage on required or elective topics. So let's add this together. So you're on a shipyard, 3 hours of the required courses, 1, 2, 3. Oh, right, intro to OSHA, walking, working, service, PPE. Shipyard, so you're at 3. Shipyard employment only, you have another 4 hours. So you have three, and now you got seven. Now you have elective, right? So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So now you have 8, which is HAZCOM, lockout, tagger, or respiratory. That's your elective. Now we're up to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Now we're up to 8. And for shipyard, an optional 2 hours, shipyard employment, 2 hours, you have to pick from that, and I'm highlighting it, hot work, material handling, BPP, bloodborne pathogens, machine guarding, ergonomics, and proper lifting techniques, or additional coverage on required or elective topics or any other maritime hazard or policy. I'm going to tell you this, limited to things that are in 1915 standard. With that, with the exception of respiratory protection, which is 1910-134, and that is a vertical and horizontal standard where it applies to every workplace out there. Now, let's go back to longshoring, right? Required three hours, longshoring and marine terminals. So required 3 hours, right? So you got three. Intro to OSHA, walking working services, right? And then you have, that's 3 hours. Then you have an elective, well, 4 hours for marine terminals, right? Now we're up to seven, HAZCOM, lockout, tagout, respiratory protection, and fall protection, electrical. You got a lot going on there. Now you're up to seven, and now you have an optional 3 hours for marine terminals and everything with the hot work, material handling, bloodborne pathogens, machine guarding, ergonomics, and proper lifting techniques, and additional coverage. Now, what's my point here with this? You had better make damn sure that you're out there and you're planning this stuff out. Before you get there, this is why OSHA requires a syllabus prior to the start of work because of this type of issue here. Where there's confusion. So you have that. And what I do is I have that. I have a checklist. I have my training materials, PowerPoint, everything, whatever props I use and everything. And then I have a list. And I have, because we have a handy-dandy thing called a cell phone, we have a timer on there. And I make sure I hit the threshold on every one of these topics with this. Now, the 30-hour maritime industry designated training topics. This is 30 hours. We just went over the 10-hour. Now let's talk about the 30-hour. This training program is intended to provide a variety of training to workers with some safety responsibility. Training should emphasize hazard ID, blah, 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 in 30 hours. So you have a required 7 hours. And this applies to everything. Intro to OSHA, managing safety and health for 2 hours. May include injury and illness prevention programs, job site inspections, accident prevention, management commitment and employee involvement, work site analysis, hazard prevention and control, accident investigations, how to conduct a safety meeting and supervisory communication, walking and working services, including fall protection, 2 hours, and PPE for 2 hours, and for shipyard employment only, you're required an additional 8 hours in fall protection, electrical, confined and enclosed spaces, and fire protection. So that's two. So right off the bat, you're required 15 hours of that with shipyard only. Now in the elective, you're allowed another 2 hours of in shipyard employment, and then you have 8 hours in marine terminals and longshoring. So if you're keeping count here, now you're up to 17 hours at the end of this in shipyards, and with marine terminals and longshoring, you are going to have 15 hours. Aye, aye, aye. So marine terminals and longshoring, you go fall protection, electrical, confined and enclosed spaces, and fire protection. And the optional, so you're at 17 for shipyards, and you're at 15 for marine terminals and longshoring, and then you have this whole list of things to choose from for an additional training time where the minimum length of any topic is 30 minutes. You have hot work, material handling, bloodborne pathogens, machine guarding, ergonomics and proper lifting techniques, additional coverage on required and or elective topics. So you have 30 hours. And so how does this come down to? A maximum of 7.5 hours a day for training. So the quickest that you could do 30-hour training is 4 days. And the quickest you could do 10-hour training is 2 days. Way back in the day, you used to do it in 1 day. We used to have the weekend of safety training, where on Friday you do 10 hours, and then Saturday you do, this is when I was in the painting industry, we would do, and this was allowed. We know we do everything what we're allowed to do. And in the paint, and on Saturday, we do respiratory protection, lead, and maybe another topic. And then on Sunday, we do fall protection. But anyway, that's which we're not allowed to do. Now we got to extend it out another day because you can't do training in 1 day for this. And again, what do you think the number one question I get in this? Can anyone guess with this? Come on, you should know it. What's the number one question Jim always gets? How long does a 30-hour course take? And how long does a 10-hour course take? Any guess on that? You know, that's what it is. So hopefully this will get rid of any confusion, but we'll add to your confusion because I tell you what, I do this all the time and I still am sweating it out every time. Do I have the right topics? Do I have the right hours? Do I have the right thing? And it always works out good because we're very diligent on that. Now, we're also allowed, they've loosened up requirements on online training, Zoom training, Teams, whatever online platform you're going to use with that, as long as you meet the legal requirements under the OSHA outreach training. They've loosened things up a little bit where you only have to give them 1 week notice, and there is much, much, much rejoicing in everything. On fire. Yes, thank you. Right, and with that, so we're going to go into our OSHA news and views next, and we will get back to you. We're going to our second commercial break here, and what commercial did you not hear? We'll figure that out.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's safety today.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
Hey there, safety professionals. Welcome to another episode of Safety Wars on Safety FM, hosted by Jim Posel. And today we're diving into what it really means to be on the front lines of the safety war. So let's start with the basics. Safety is not just a set of rules or regulations. It's a culture, a mindset, a way of life. When we talk about safety, we're not just protecting workers from harm. We're building an environment where everyone can thrive. It's about going home safe and sound to our families every single day. Now, I know it sounds like a heavy responsibility, but that's why we're here. To make sure everyone understands the importance of safety and knows how to implement it effectively. Whether you're a seasoned safety professional or just starting out, there's always something new to learn. Let's talk about some key strategies. First up, communication. It's critical to ensure that everyone on the team is on the same page. Regular safety meetings, clear signage, and open dialogue can prevent a lot of accidents before they even happen. Next, let's focus on training. proper training equips your team with the knowledge and skills they need to stay safe. Remember, it's not just about ticking a box. It's about making sure every worker understands the why behind each safety protocol. This understanding fosters a culture of safety where everyone looks out for one another. Of course, we can't forget about technology. From wearable safety devices to advanced monitoring systems, technology is revolutionizing how we approach safety. Embrace it. Use these tools to enhance your safety programs and keep your team protected. But let's not get too comfortable. Safety is an ongoing battle. New risks and challenges emerge all the time. Stay vigilant, stay informed, and never stop striving for a safer workplace. So, what's the takeaway? Safety is everyone's responsibility. It's about creating a culture where safety is ingrained in everything we do. As safety professionals, it's our job to lead by example and inspire our teams to commit to a safer future. Thanks for tuning in to Safety Wars on Safety FM. Stay safe out there, and remember, every day is a new opportunity to make a difference. Catch you on the next episode.
Okay, so we are back. You know, we're going to go over, I'm looking through the news releases here, the press releases, and for whatever reason, I'm sure people are on vacation. People are allowed to go on vacation at OSHA, who handle this stuff. Is the, not a lot of stuff going on the press release side. And why do we do press releases here? One, they are publicly available. And they give us a lot of insight to what's going on out there. Now, the press release we're going to really read right now is, I'm going to say this, right? And I put this together because this is what the reality is.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Harsh reality is correct. Let's do a share screen here. And here we have Department of Labor. And if you're following along on the video, you'll see this, right? On the audio here, Department of Labor awards more than $6.6 million to continued support for temporary jobs and workforce training in Florida after Hurricane Idalia. And this is from yesterday, I believe. The U.S. Department of Labor today announced the award of more than $6.6 million to support continued disaster relief employment and workforce training for eligible residents in Florida as the state's recovery after Hurricane Idalia continues. On September 18, 2023, the department announced a national dislocated worker grant of up to $20 million with an initial award of $6.6 million to the Florida Department of Commerce to provide people with temporary employment focused on debris, or as some people say, debris removal, water damage cleanup, and the delivery of humanitarian assistance for those affected by the storm, and for career and training services for affected workers. Funding also supports career training and services for area workers. On August 30, 2023, Hurricane Idalia struck the northeastern Gulf Coast as a Category 3 storm, bringing strong winds, storm surges, and massive flooding to the region. The incremental award announced today will continue to support disaster relief jobs and employment and training services to assist people in 33 counties. FEMA issued emergency declaration on August 28, 2023, and the major disaster declaration on August 31, 2023, enabling the state to request federal assistance for recovery efforts. And it's going on and on and on, right, with that. Now, this is part of what our, you say, well, that's all well and good, Jim. Now, why, we're going to do a segue, that's a perfect segue into disaster training here. Disaster, and this is, again, was issued in July 1st, 2024, outreach training program for disaster site workers. Now, again, this is optional training. This is awareness level training, and there are two training courses that they offer. And that we're able to do, 845-269-5772. One of them is for 7.5 hour. It used to be, I believe it was 8 hour and 16 hour, but then OSHA said, hey, we can't do that when they changed their hours, and they made it 7.5 and 15, for 7.5 hours a day. So if you've been through this and you're like, oh, Jimmy, are you sure? It's, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, well, they changed it a number of years ago with this. I know when I took this originally in 2010 with the great Dr. Van Houten, right, friend of our program, who was a professor at NJIT, it was 8 and 16. Now, why do they, why is this a good idea to have? This is what happens in a disaster, and I didn't have enough time to really go deep on this whole Hurricane Idalia thing. But normally the OSHA regular enforcement gets curtailed, and OSHA becomes more of a compliance assistance type thing or a consultant role during disasters. That doesn't negate the need for going through and reporting things and everything else, but often a lot of resources are not available in a disaster, especially federally declared disaster, where things are lagging. So you may have supply line issues, or you have to have people that are being rescued and things being moved and everything. You may not be following 100% the OSHA regulations on that. So they go into more of, let's say, a compliance assistant thing. Now, that's led to some controversies over the years. So, for example, during 9/11, they went into a consulting role, and they said, you know what, you really should wear that respirator. And now, what do you mean? We're saving here to save lives, and we're not going to wear the respirator, F you. Well, you know, now you're like 4 or 5 weeks into the response. There is a recovery thing. It's like a cleanup type thing. And, you know, now OSHA should apply all of the rules, but they didn't really apply them. And now, before you know it, you have 39,000 people with respiratory issues. And, of course, no one's responsible because of sovereign immunity, right? So this is the other thing. The other thing that, now, as a safety professional, it drives me up a wall is that when you get volunteers aiding in a disaster, and guess what? What's the first rule of any type of emergency response? Well, my first rule, I'll say Jimmy's first rule, don't make the problem worse. Everybody's well-intentioned. I get it. Everybody wants to lend a hand. There are lives at risk, and I get all of that. But that doesn't mean that you get hurt going to try to do things, right? To try to respond, right? You may take risks or things like that. And well, that's a big, long debate here, philosophical, legal, and everything else. But you don't want to get yourself hurt because now you have another person hurt in the disaster response. So OSHA realizes that, and they came up with the disaster response disaster response worker training. And what the focus is, when we're doing this training and when we're getting certified, right, because of situations, at least in this area with 9/11, 2001, because of that situation, their big thing is, dude, you have to focus on respiratory protection. That's what I got. Look, stress, respiratory protection, and not become part of the problem. So I just like the promo said here, harsh reality, and we're going to deal with harsh reality because that's all about the safety war that we're all fighting here, is we have to face reality, right? So I could say that right into the camera. Facing the harsh reality is part of the safety war. Dealing with empirical data, empirical responses, stoic, right? If I could say that, stoic, and Mr. Spock Vulcan logic, if we could do it, is the way that we need to respond to this stuff. We are supposed to be professionals out here. Let's act like professionals and not be in a panic because you're adding more energy to a situation, right, that Right. That doesn't need more energy. So, for example, an analogy is a chemical reaction, right, or a chemical process. You don't want to add more energy than what's necessary because then you have an explosion often. This is the same thing with dealing with emergency responses. You got to be, right, reasonable. So here we have, how do you become an authorized disaster site worker outreach trainer? You need several things. And this is for the training part, and this is where there is confusion. Not for the worker part, for the trainer part. You have to do the disaster site worker trainer course, right? Experience cannot be substituted for the training prerequisite component. OSHA does not issue waivers for these components. So somebody might be a firefighter instructor, police instructor, EMT instructor, military training, the appropriate one, or something like that, or even if you're like me, where I've been through the community emergency response training here that I completed for my community, where I'm CERT, right? That doesn't count. Now, being through the CERT program and also being a trainer for this, is there a lot of overlap? You better believe it. And are we going to be talking about it next month during Disaster Preparation Month in like 2 weeks? The answer, right after Labor Day. The answer is you can be darn sure we're going to be doing that. So the course includes a knowledge and performance-based test. Completion of one of the following. You have to have completed a 40-hour HAZWOPR, Hazardous Waste Site Operations and Emergency Response, training course within the past 5 years, or the 8-hour HAZWOPR refresher, right, for within the past 12 months. That's 29 CFR 1910-120. You must possess journey-level credentials and a building trade union. Because you're dealing with buildings, building collapses, moving things. So that's why they require that with that. And let's face it, a journey level credential from a trade union is like 5 years. You got to go to school for 5 years. So it is an accomplishment with that. Update requirements. Remain current on all relevant OSHA matters and ensure quality training. Disaster site outreach trainers are required to complete the following to maintain a trainer's authorization status. The OSHA 5602 update for disaster site worker trainer course every 4 years, or the OSHA 5600 disaster site worker trainer course. The trainer's authorization has expired. The trainer will be unable to conduct outreach training and receive student course completion cards, except blah, 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 blah. And there's things in there. Basically, do not let your training expire, and it's got to be done within, before it expires, right? So that's why with me, and it's one of my laments is that people do not take disaster preparation seriously. They do not, a bad thing happens, and then there's awareness, and then there's this, and it's the whole issue attention cycle thing, which we've already discussed on this program several times. I mean, we got to talk about it again with that, the issue attention cycle. Where people think, oh, well, this is high, a real short one sentence. People think, oh, that's been resolved, and it's never been resolved, right? Because we're not hearing about it in the news. So here you have the section contains additional training requirements, 7.5, blah, blah, blah. Now, student prerequisites. There are no student prerequisites for attending the 7.5 or 15-hour disaster site worker course. Right? Respiratory training. For the respiratory part of this, you need three different respirators. You need a half face, a full face piece, negative pressure, and a powered air purifying respirator, aka PAPR. Respirators with defective elements, quantity 5 or 6, complete selection of respirator filters and cartridges for demonstration, and for every two participants, one half ACP's negative pressure respirator equipped with triple cartridges is required. Meaning that you have three, you have to have three types of things. Evaluation. Conduct the respirator exercise and complete the individual performance checklist and scores. Discuss the students' notes made to complete their theme worksheet at the end of the course as a summary exercise, meaning that they require a like a tabletop exercise. Students must participate in a final exercise that evaluates their ability to identify potential safety and health hazards at disaster sites, state types of PPE that might be needed, consider personal hygiene for decon issues that would be that would need to be addressed, and list their personal responsibilities for their own safety and health. For disaster, and then it goes through here, the whole procedure. So here we have 7.5-hour disaster site worker designated training topics. So here they make it much easier than what we just went through with maritime. I'll say that much. So for the 7.5-hour training, you need characteristics of a disaster, hazard awareness, which includes physical health and traumatic stress, 0.5 hours. So traumatic stress injury stuff is very important with this. They're stressing because PTSD issues is essentially it. And then you have tool and equipment safety, 1 hour. Risk assessment, incident command system for 1 hour. Now, the incident command system, if we recall, on the Uvalde situation with the school shooting, where did they fail? Come on, everybody. In the report, we've done that. Where did they fail? Incident command system. So that really is, you know, so incident command system, 1 hour, with what? Come on, Jimmy. Well, guess what? If there's going to be a critical failure on the management of a situation, most likely it's going to be in the incident command system, where basically nobody's in charge, right? Hierarchy of controls, PPE for 1 hour, an exercise workshop for 0.5 hours. Now, for the 15-hour disaster site worker, you need an activity or must complete a theme worksheet throughout the course as reinforcement of the learning. A discussion of notes made to complete the theme worksheet will be facilitated at the end of the course to enhance the retention and transfer of their new knowledge back on the job. Of primary importance is the participant's ability to perform the specific task correctly. A. Inspection of a air purifying respirator. B. Donning or doffing, right? Don and doff. What does it mean? You put it don and you take it doff. Easy way to remember. Thank you, Jeff Olcott. Right? And air purifying respirator. Respirator user seal check. You have a testing component. The course will conclude with a final assessment in the form of an exercise that will measure the participant's mastery of all the course objectives. The training topics. Characteristics of a disaster, 1.25 hours. Hazard awareness, physical health, and traumatic stress. Right? So, tool, equipment, and safety, 3.5 hours. Risk assessment, 1.25 hours. Hierarchy of controls, 1.25 hours. PPE, 1.25 hours. And an exercise slash workshop, 0.75 hours. What are you not allowed with any of this? Right? First aid and CPR, not allowed as part of the course. And that's it on that. So, and this is all the other paperwork you need and everything else with that. Oh, and I didn't even have a share screen on that. So let's do a share screen for your viewers on the internet. 7.5, there it is. You can pause right there. All of the things, the cat, right, with all the requirements. Let me zoom in. Right, and on the 15 hours, that's it, right there. Now, normally people like me do not do the disaster training stuff. Why is that? Because there are organizations throughout the metro New York area and a lot of the other areas that give this for free. Give this completely for free. And guess what? I'll be honest with you. We don't work for free here. Right? We do not work for free. For some reason, I get an echo on YouTube. I have no idea. I cannot seem to work that out with that. So we're going to have to figure that out. So anyway, we've got some messages here. Hold on. For the first time, I got a love from somebody. Okay, well, thank you. I love you, too. So I hope, you know. Boom, boom. Live chat. All right, so that's what's going on here with this. I normally do not get any comments here, but I got comments here. Let me say hello. All right. So that's what's going on with that and with everything else. I hope you had a good day. Now, before we end, I wanted to. No, I was on with Jay Allen yesterday. The podcast hit today with him on his show. Check him out. I will have a link to that tonight, God willing. So 1,000 programs today on the Rated R Safety Show. That's an accomplishment. With that, I'm very proud that we have a network here where we have the leader of the network doing the actual work here. That's an important thing. And 1,000 episodes is tough. We're on, I believe this is number 353. So I know what that is. I mean, it's a burnout environment. Anyone says that radio is not a burnout environment has never done radio. Especially when you're doing monologues like on the Rated R Safety Show. That's essentially a one-hour news show with news clips, and it's a monologue. We handle the monologue here because if I don't talk like this, I have to talk to my wife, and then there is a problem, and yelling and screaming. Why don't you shut up? The whole thing, right? I'm joking on there, of course, joking. So we're going to be talking, we talked with Sheldon Primus. We'll be doing that program tomorrow. That's not going to be live. I'll be doing a recorded program here with Sheldon with that, unless something else happens. So we will see you tomorrow, and we're going to, how many more minutes do I have here? We have, on Radio Co. For some reason, I was signed out of that. Hopefully, I was broadcasting on Safety FM here. So I have 2 minutes and 22 seconds. Hey, that's perfect for the outro. We'll see you tomorrow, and we'll go from there. We'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.